Book of Ruth. Now, which number book of the Bible is Ruth? Is that the second book or how many? Eighth. I heard somebody say eighth. I think that's right, isn't it? We've got five books of the Pentateuch. And then we've done, this is the third book of history. So let's review and go through all eight books in order, starting with Genesis, through the five books of the Pentateuch, and then three books of history. All right, everybody together, stay with us. Here we go, starting with Genesis. Ready? Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, Joshua, Judges, Ruth. All right, as you say the book's order, you kind of get into a sort of a sound pattern, and that helps you to remember them. And that's the way it goes. Let's go one more time through those eight books. Here we go. Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, Joshua, Judges, Ruth. All right, look in your Bibles to the book of Ruth, and we'll examine this little book. Only four chapters, but it's a book that's filled with all kinds of glorious truths. First of all, consider the setting of this book. By the setting, we mean where did this book take place, when was it written, who wrote it, and all that kind of thing. The background of the book, the setting. Chapter 1, verse 1, it says, "Now it came to pass in the days when the judges ruled that there was a famine in the land." Now, by the setting, where would you put, what book of Scripture would you put this right beside? And here, where? Which book would it go with? Judges, all right. It says this book happened in the days of the judges. We just last week studied the book of Judges. Here's a book that happened in those days. Now remember from last week, the days of the judges, about 350, 400 years, those were pretty rough days. Those were the days when there was no king in Israel, and every man did that which was right in his own eyes. So it was a lot of confusion, chaos, disorder, immorality, idolatry, persecution, all kinds of difficult things. And as you come to the end of the book of Judges, you read some awful stories of things that occurred in those days. There was Micah and his idol, how he made his own idol and got his own priest, and somebody else came along and carried him off. And that was a sad commentary on things in those days. And then there was a story about the man who had a runaway wife and stopped somewhere, and the people abused her to death, and he cut her up in pieces and sent the pieces all around, and then they all got together to make war with those people and almost wiped out the tribe of Benjamin. And awful things going on in those days. Those were rough days, but there's always a remnant. You know, things are never as bad as they could be. Now, they're bad. They're bad in our country today, but it could get worse. Probably will, too. But anyway, things are never as bad as they could be. And things were bad in the days of the judges. Those were days of violence and disorder and immorality. But in spite of that, there were still times and places where there was little order and some godliness and some purity, as we see in the book of Ruth. If it wasn't for the book of Ruth, you would think everything in the days of the judges was bad and wicked and terrible. But it wasn't so. Chapter 1, verse 1, "It came to pass in the days when the judges ruled that there was a famine in the land." Now, most of these famines came because of disobedience to God. God had told the Israelites earlier, "If you will obey God and follow my word and do what you're supposed to do, I'll bless you, and there will be rain, and you'll have good crops. If you disobey God and turn to idolatry and wickedness and immorality, then you're going to have a rough time. And the heavens will be brass, and the earth will be like iron, and you won't grow much, and you'll have problems." And that was what was happening here. There was a famine in the land. "And a certain man of Bethlehem, Judah, went to sojourn in the country of Moab, he and his wife and his two sons." Now, this particular incident begins in Bethlehem, Bethlehem, Judah. That's the normal Bethlehem. The word Bethlehem means the house of bread. That was just a particularly fruitful and a productive piece of real estate around there. I mean, things really grew well. The fields were nice, and the vineyards were luxurious, and the crops were bountiful. It was known all across the country. The boy, things really grow well around Bethlehem, and the farmers really do well there. But even in that place, there was a famine. Now that Bethlehem is the same Bethlehem where 1,200 years later, Christ was born. And that was the same little city where later on King David was born. And the city of Bethlehem is still there. Some of us have stood in the streets of Bethlehem and eaten falafel and Jewish food. And look outside the city of Bethlehem and you can still see the hills where Ruth gleaned the grain. And where David tended sheep. And where the shepherds saw the angels. This is that Bethlehem. And famine came upon this land. And so this particular man named Elimelech, he went across, it says, to the land of Moab. Now, that's not really all that far, just down the hill, across the Jordan River, probably 20 miles or so, 30 at the most, and just an easy 2 days journey for folk in those days. And right across the Jordan River, in what nowadays we would call the land of Jordan, that's where the Moabites lived. Now, who were the Moabites? The Moabites were descendants of Lot and one of Lot's daughters. Remember, after Lot and his two daughters fled from the city of Sodom, they made their father drunk and entered into an incestuous relationship with him. And the child of that union was called Moab. The word Moab literally means from the father. So these Moabites were descendants of Lot, and therefore they were sort of distant relatives of the Jews, of the Israelites. And therefore the Moabites and the Israelites, they got along fairly well most of the time. They had fairly amicable relations between them. And so it wasn't any big thing for someone from Israel to go over to Moab and stay over there, and they would be generally fairly well received. Now, in chapter 1, verse 4, it tells us that they dwell there about 10 years. 10 years, maybe a little more, 11 years encompasses all that we find here in this little book of Ruth. Now, who wrote the book of Ruth? Well, go back to chapter 4 and verse 7. Sometimes you have to look for some little keys and little clues as to when a book was written and who wrote it. It says in chapter 4, verse 7, "Now this was the manner in former time in Israel concerning redeeming." In other words, so this verse says, this is the way they did it in olden times, or back earlier, they did it this way. We don't do that anymore, but this is the way they used to do it. So the book of Ruth was obviously written sometime after it happened. Then in chapter 4, verse 22, it gives a little family tree, and it says, "And Obed begat Jesse, and Jesse begat David." That tells you that it was written during the time of David. If it had been written before David came on the scene, they wouldn't have known about David. And if it had been written after David, they would have said David and his son Solomon and so on. So obviously this little book of Ruth was written during the days of David. No sooner, no later. And it was therefore likely written by one of David's companions. Perhaps the old prophet Samuel wrote this book of Ruth as well as the book of Judges. And it was written somewhere about 1000 B.C. All right, that's the setting of the book of Ruth. Now, the story of the book of Ruth. The story. Here is a man named Elimelech and his wife Naomi. They have two sons, Mahlon and Chilion. And famine comes up, and so Elimelech says to his wife, "We're just going to have to go somewhere else. Things are getting too hard here. The crops are failing. Let's go across to Moab. Things are a little better over there." And so they packed their suitcase, loaded it on their donkey, and they went down and across the Jordan River and settled down in the land of Moab. After they were there for a while, some years, Elimelech, the father, died. After he died, his two sons got acquainted with some of the young ladies in the land there, some of the Moabite young ladies, and they married them. And then shortly after that, both of them died. And so here was this widow woman, Naomi, in a foreign country with two daughter-in-laws who were natives of that country. And she says, I hear things are a little better back in Israel now. I'm going back home. And so her two daughter-in-laws, Ruth and Orpah, they say, Naomi, we love you. We're going with you. And they start out down the road with her. And she begins to argue with them, say, now, you shouldn't go with me. Here's your family. This is your home here. I'm not going to have any more sons. Too old for that. You wouldn't wait around another 20, 30 years for them anyhow. You go back there and find another husband and settle down there. And so Orpah, she said, okay. And she turned around and went back home. Ruth said, no, nothing doing. I'm going to stay with you. Your people are going to be my people and your God is my God. She'd put her faith in the God of Israel. And she said, I'm not going to leave you. And so she went on back to Bethlehem with her mother-in-law, Naomi. Well, when they got back, Naomi was a poor woman. Husband hadn't left her any big insurance policy. She didn't have anything to live on. And she was getting a little bit on in years, so she wasn't too nimble anymore. And so her daughter-in-law, Ruth, said, I will go out and glean in the fields. It's harvest time now, and I will go out and pick up the grain that they leave when they harvest the fields. Good Israelites, when they harvest the fields, would always leave a little grain lying around. That was their welfare system back in those days. The farmers would leave a few grapes on the vines. They wouldn't go back and make sure they got every one. They'd leave a few here and there, the odd ones, the ones were hard to reach. And they wouldn't pick up every little cluster of grain that they cut down if they'd left a few here or there. And the poor people were then entitled to go out and pick them up. That was their right. They'd have to ask permission of the landowner, but he would give them permission normally, and they'd go out and pick up what they could get. Modern welfare, the government would go out and get it for them, bring it to them, and bake it into bread and hand it to them, but in those days they had to go out and get it themselves. And so Ruth went out and she started gleaning in the fields, and she came upon, she just happened to choose this field, and it was owned by a man named Boaz. And turned out that Boaz was a relative of Naomi, a relative of the family. And so as the story goes on, trust you've read the book of Ruth, Boaz takes notice of this young woman, he being a wealthy man and a little more middle-aged sort of person than Ruth was. He takes notice of her, and he treats her very kindly, and he tells his servants to, you can leave a little extra grain lying around for her. It won't hurt anything. You know, we've got plenty. And so they did that, and she was able to glean fairly productively. She got quite a bit of grain to take home with her. And then as Naomi finds out what's going on, and I'm sure we don't have the whole story there. You know, things were different in those days. Back in olden times, women used to like to kind of gossip and talk about things a little bit. Don't do that anymore. But back in Bible days, they did it that way. And I'm sure that the women around town kind of got talking. There wasn't much excitement going on in small towns like that. You know, a couple hundred people, everybody knew everybody and everybody's business. And I'm sure they kind of got talking about all that. Boaz, he sure is treating Ruth kind of nice, and she sure is a nice young lady, and you know how that sort of thing goes. And by, Naomi says, Ruth, here's what you ought to do. This Boaz, he's a kinsman. Now, that means he has the responsibility to redeem our property for us, if he will, and he also has the responsibility to raise up a son for his dead relative, my husband. And therefore, it was proper, it seems a little strange for us nowadays, but it was proper for a woman in that condition to go to this man and say, hey, I'm asking you to redeem our property, and basically I'm asking you to redeem our property and marry me. That sounds a little forward nowadays, maybe not anymore, but that's it used to be. But in those days, that was right and proper because that was responsibility of the kinsman to be a redeemer if he were able to do so. And so, as the custom was, she went to the field. Probably Boaz was a busy man, and there weren't too many opportunities for her to conduct a conversation with him. But she went to the field where they were reaping, and that night she asked him to do just that. She said, put your shawl over me, which was a custom in the marriage in Bible days. The husband would put a kind of a shawl over the head of the bride, which was a symbol of saying, I'm taking you under my protection. I'm covering you up with my protection, and you are mine to take care of from now on. And so she asked him to do that, which was literally, in our ways, asking him to marry her. So he said, I would be glad to do that, but there is another relative who is closer relative than I am. And so, therefore, he has the first obligation, and if he will redeem the property, then he can do it, and if he won't, then I will. And so Ruth went home, and the next morning, bright and early, Boaz goes out to the gate of the city. That's where they conducted all the business, and he sat down here, and every time a man came by, he says, hey, come here and sit down for a little bit. And they were glad to do it. What's going on anyway? They had to get 10 men to make an official court hearing, and he got 10 men together, and then this other relative comes along, and he says, oh, come here and sit down. And he came, and he sat down. He says, now I want you to know that Naomi, who's come back from Moab, wants to redeem her field. You've got the right to redeem it. You're first in line. And he says, all right, I'll redeem it. And Boaz says, there's one other catch. In addition to redeeming the field, you've got to marry this daughter-in-law. You've got to marry Ruth as well to raise up a descendant for the line, for this property. Now, we have to understand that in those days, property always stayed in the family. And even if you sold it to someone, you only sold it until the year of Jubilee. Every 50 years, the property returned to its rightful owner. So actually, you only rented property forever how many years it was until the Jubilee, 10 years or 20 years or 30 years or whatever. And you would rent it for what you thought you'd get from the income from the fields of that property until that time. The longer it was till the Jubilee, the more you'd pay for the property. The shorter time it was to the Jubilee, the less you'd pay. But this man says, if I get this property, if I pay this property for this property, and then if the Jubilee comes, which it will pretty soon, and then I have to give it to this descendant of this woman, I'm going to be out the money, and what am I going to gain? And so he says, I won't redeem it. No, I don't want any part of that deal. And Boaz says, all right, then you all take notice, all you witnesses, that I this day have purchased the property of Naomi to redeem it, and Ruth to be my wife. And he married her, and they all lived happily ever after. So now that's the story of the book of Ruth. Now, the lessons, now that's what we want to notice. Now, there's a multitude of marvelous lessons in this little book. Lessons of, first of all, the mercy of God and the providence of God and the faithfulness of God and the redemption of God and the grace of God. And all those lessons are lessons about God. And, you know, that's what we need to know. We need to know about God. Humanism would say, let's study man. Scripture says, let's study God. Because, you see, what matters is not what man is and what man does. What matters is who God is and what God does. That's what counts. And so look briefly at some of these lessons with me. First of all, the mercy of God. Now, you know, these people did a lot of things wrong. Verse 1 of chapter 1, it says, there was a famine in the land, and a certain man of Bethlehem, Judah, went to sojourn in the country of Moab. He left the country of the promised land, and he went across to Moab. Now, he shouldn't have done that. God says, this is the land I've given you, Israel. I want you to stay here. That was the land God gave them. And all through the Old Testament, every time they left the land, they got in trouble. Abraham got in trouble when he left the land and went down into Egypt. Isaac got in trouble when he left that land and went down into Egypt. Israel got in trouble when they left that land and went down into Egypt. They ended up slaves. Yet there's always a notion in the heads of God's people that if we don't get all we want when we want it from the Lord, then we'll go find it somewhere else. Then we'll go find it in the world. You know, then we'll go down to Egypt. We'll take a ship and go to Tarshish. We'll devour our living in a far country. We'll go over to Moab. But you know, the world can never give you what God can give you. And if you try to get what you think you need from the world, you're just chasing rainbows, and you'll never find it. They went over there because there was famine, and they went over to Moab to seek for bread, and they found graves instead. Elimelech and Mahlon and Chilion, they all died there. They shouldn't have gone there. And then in chapter 1, verse 3, it says, "And Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died, and she was left, and her two sons, and they took them wives of the women of Moab." Now, they shouldn't have done that either. They shouldn't have married Moabites. The country of Moab was a country of idol worshippers. I notice that it's after father died that these two young men married these heathen women. I take it that father had some influence on them while he lived, and once he was dead and gone, they thought they'd do as they please, and they did the wrong thing. And then they shouldn't have stayed there. After her husband died, Naomi should have packed up and gone back home, but she didn't do that either. And then if you go to chapter 1, verse 19, I notice that she became bitter over the whole thing. She shouldn't have become bitter either. It says, verse 19, "So they two went until they came to Bethlehem." This is when they're coming back. "And it came to pass when they were come to Bethlehem that all the city was moved about them, and they said, 'Is this Naomi?'" Now, Naomi, the word means pleasantness. Now, she was always before such a pleasant woman. Now, she had that name, Pleasant. Now, she was just a friendly, gracious, rejoicing, pleasant kind of person. "But," verse 20, "she said unto them, 'Call me not Naomi. Don't call me Pleasant, call me Mara.'" That means bitter. "For the Almighty hath dealt very bitterly with me." She was bitter. She wasn't pleasant anymore. She had thought about these things that had happened. She had complained in her heart, "Why did this happen? Why did God take my husband? Why did he take my two sons? Why am I left a widow without anything to provide for me?" And she was bitter. And she shouldn't have done that either. So you see, we have a needy picture here. There's a lack of faith. There's disobedience. They refused to learn their lessons. She became bitter. But to that same Naomi, in spite of all those things, God came to her and He restored her and He blessed her and He brought her back to, at the end of the book, she's rejoicing. See, that's the mercy of God. The book begins with famine, and it ends with plenty. It begins with death, and it ends with birth. It begins with bitterness, and it ends with rejoicing. And what did the psalmist say? "Weeping may endure for a night, but joy cometh in the morning." All because of the mercy of God. And the prophet said, "It's of the Lord's mercies that we are not consumed." What do we sinners deserve? What do we deserve from God? We don't deserve anything. But we have a merciful God who saves us and helps us and restores us anyway, even though we don't deserve a thing. The prophet says, "Thy mercies fail not. They're new every morning." Then would you think a little bit about the providence of God? The providence of God. Oh, back in a couple hundred years ago, God's people would always talk about divine providence. Don't use that phrase much anymore, but it's a good phrase anyway. Divine providence, that means that God is on the throne and He's supervising and controlling and working out the smallest details of our life. God's in charge and He's running things. That's divine providence. Now look at chapter 2, verse 3. when this young woman Ruth goes out to glean in the fields, it says, verse 3, she went and came and gleaned in the field after the reapers, and her hap was to light on a part of the field belonging unto Boaz, who was of the kindred of Elimelech. Notice that little phrase, her hap. Now, that's kind of an old-fashioned way of saying, well, it just happened this way. Well, it happened that way because God intended it to happen that way. God saw to it that it happened that way. It doesn't mean this was an accident or good luck. It means the providence of God was at work, so he brought that young woman to the very field where she would meet this man, Boaz, who was to be her husband. So there she was, gleaning, picking up the straws, as she had to get permission. And it says her hap was, it just happened. You know, there were hundreds of fields around Bethlehem. How did it happen that she came to the field of Boaz? She didn't know Boaz. It wasn't luck. It was the providence of God. It's the same providence of God that brought Pharaoh's daughter down to that particular place in the river at that particular time when Moses was floating out there in that basket and crying, so she would find him and adopt him into her household. It's the same providence of God that brought old blind Bartimaeus to be, happened to be on that particular stretch of road where Jesus was that day when he came on the way from Jericho to meet blind Bartimaeus and heal him. It was the same providence of God that put Esther in the palace so that when the Jews were threatened with extinction, Esther was there to appeal to the king and have them delivered. And Paul says of God, we have a God who works all things according to the counsel of his will. And you can probably look back over your life, and you can probably see strange circumstances in your life that brought you to where God wanted you to be. Because you see, we have a God who can do that. We believe in the providence of God. Then there's another lesson here, a lesson in the redemption of God. Look at chapter 4. Chapter 4, verse 1. Then went Boaz up to the gate and sat him down there. And behold, the kinsman of whom Boaz spake came by, unto whom he said, Ho, such and one, turn aside, sit down here. And he turned aside and sat down. And he took 10 men of the elders of the city and said, Sit ye down here. And they sat down. And he said unto the kinsmen, Naomi that has come out of the country of Moab selleth a parcel of land which was our brother Elimelech's. And I thought to advertise thee, saying, Buy it before the inhabitants and before the elders of my people. If thou wilt redeem it, redeem it. But if thou wilt not redeem it, then tell me that I may know, for there is none to redeem it besides thee, and I am after thee. And he said, I will redeem it. Then said Boaz, What day thou buyest the field of the hand of Naomi, thou must buy it also of Ruth the Moabitess, the wife of the dead, to raise up the name of the dead upon his inheritance. And the kinsman said, I cannot redeem it for myself, lest I mar mine own inheritance. Redeem thou my right to thyself, for I cannot redeem it. Now, when someone, because they were in financial need, sold their land, it could always be redeemed, bought back, because land stayed in the family forever. And it could be redeemed at any time. Now, you see, Naomi had sold this land, and so she had no income, no source of income. That was your income. You took the produce from the field. That was the income in those days. Now, if that land would be bought back for Naomi, then it would be income for her again. And so, it was also, as I mentioned, the responsibility of the Redeemer to take the wife of the dead relative and to take her as his wife, so there would be a son to inherit the property afterwards. Now, that all is a picture of the redemption we have in Christ. You see, we belong to God. And yet we've been sold into the bondage of sin. And Christ is our Redeemer who comes with his blood to buy us back for himself. Now, there's three qualities of a Redeemer. First of all, a Redeemer had to be a relative. Boaz could redeem this property because he was a relative of Elimelech. That's why Jesus Christ became man. It says in the book of Hebrews, he took not on him the nature of angels, but he became one of us. So he could be in our family, our relative, therefore qualified to redeem us. The second quality of a redeemer was he had to be able. Boaz had to have the money in his pocket to do it. He had to be able to afford to do it. If Boaz didn't have any money, he couldn't redeem the property. But Boaz was able. He had the money to do it. Jesus Christ was able. He could redeem us. And no amount of silver or gold could redeem us, but he redeemed us with his own blood. The precious blood of the Lamb is of a lamb without spot and without blemish. He was able. And then thirdly, a redeemer had to be willing. Not only a relative and able, but he had to want to do it. Nobody could make him do it. And this other relative, he was able, he had the money, but he wasn't willing. And so he couldn't redeem and wouldn't redeem. Boaz was able and he was willing. And that's Christ, our Redeemer. He was related, he was able, and he was willing. It says he gave himself for us all, a ransom in due time. And he bought us back for himself. And as Boaz redeemed Ruth and their inheritance, so Christ redeems us. And then there's a lesson in the faithfulness of God. The faithfulness of God to honor his word. Now, Ruth was a Moabitess, but she was a good woman. Somewhere in the process, as she got acquainted with Naomi and her family, she turned from the idolatry of her family and her ancestors and her country, and she put her faith in the God of Israel. And when she went back with her mother, she said, notice chapter 1, verses 16 and 17. Chapter 1, verse 16, Ruth said, "Entreat me not to leave thee, or to return from following after thee, for whither thou goest, I will go. And where thou lodgest, I will lodge. Thy people shall be my people, and thy God, my God. Wherefore thou diest, will I die, and there will I be buried. The Lord do so to me, and more also, if aught but death part thee and me." She laid claim on the promises of the God of Israel, put her faith in God. Now she made a choice. She left her family. And probably the biggest thing she thought she was leaving, she was a young woman, a widow, and there in her own family, she would perhaps have a chance to find another husband. If she went to a country of strangers, another nation, the chances are nobody would want her for a wife. And the state of a widow was a hard one in those days, but she trusted in God. That was more important to her than the opportunity to find a home and family that was without God. Notice chapter 2, what kind of woman this was. Chapter 2, verse 10. It says, "Then she fell on her face and bowed herself to the ground and said unto him, to Boaz, why have I found grace in thine eyes that thou shouldst take knowledge of me, seeing I am a stranger? And Boaz answered and said unto her, it hath been fully showed me all that thou hast done unto thy mother-in-law since the death of thine husband, and how thou hast left thy father and thy mother and the land of thy nativity, and art come unto a people which thou knowest not heretofore. So I've heard about you, and I've heard good reports of what you've done." And notice chapter 2, verse 19, or verse 20. Naomi said unto her daughter-in-law, "Blessed be he of the Lord who hath not left off his kindness to the living and to the dead." God's been kind to us. And chapter 3, verse 11. Boaz says, "Now, my daughter, fear not, I will do to thee all that thou requirest, for all the city of my people doth know that thou art a virtuous woman." Now, this was strange. She was a Moabite. She was an outcast to these Israelites. Normally, they would hardly want to speak to her. And yet, they all knew she was a good woman. And they were treating her with respect and compassion and concern. And in chapter 4, verse 11, it says, "All the people that were in the gate and the elders said, we are witnesses. The Lord make the woman that has come into thine house like Rachel and like Leah, which too did build the house of Israel. And do thou worthily in Ephrathah and be famous in Bethlehem." They wished Boaz the best on accepting this Moabite woman as his wife. Now, did Ruth make the right choice? Did she do right to leave everything and just trust God? Surely she did, because God is faithful. And He took that woman who put her faith in Him, and He just gave her acceptance by the people, and He gave her a good husband, and He gave her great opportunities, and He made her famous, because God is faithful to honor those who trust Him. And God's faithful to you too. You trust God the way you should. You follow God like you ought. And He will honor that. He will bless you in His way, in His time. He will not forget, because God is faithful. A final lesson is a lesson in the grace of God. Notice chapter 4, verse 17. Ruth and Boaz are married, and right away they have a son. And it says in verse 17, the woman, her neighbors, gave it a name, saying, there is a son born to you, Naomi. Naomi was grandmother, but it was in her household, her family. And they called his name Obed. He is the father of Jesse, the father of David. Now these are the generations of Phares. Phares begot Hezron, and Hezron begot Ram, and Ram begot Amminadab, and Amminadab begot Nahshon, and Nahshon begot Salmon, and Salmon begot Boaz, and Boaz begot Obed, and Obed begot Jesse, and Jesse begot David. Now turn to the book of Matthew, chapter 1. The Gospel of Matthew, the first chapter, where we find the genealogy of Jesus Christ. Matthew chapter 1, verse 1. The book of the generation of Jesus Christ, the son of David, the son of Abraham. Abraham begat Isaac, and Isaac begat Jacob, and Jacob begat Judas and his brethren, and Judas begat Phares and Zerah of Tamar. Notice that's the first woman's name. He begat these sons of Tamar. And Phares begat Ezron, and Ezron begat Aram, and Aram begat Amminadab, and Amminadab begat Nahshon, and Nahshon begat Salmon, and Salmon begat Boaz of Rahab. Second woman's name mentioned. And Boaz begat Obed of Ruth. Third woman mentioned. And Obed begat Jesse, and Jesse begat David the king of And David the king begat Solomon of her that had been the wife of Uriah, that is, Bathsheba. Four women are mentioned in the genealogy of Christ. No, only four. Tamar, cloudy story there. Rahab. And notice, if you study this out, Rahab the harlot from the city of Jericho, was the mother or grandmother of Boaz. This man, the book of Ruth is about. Rahab was either his mother or grandmother. And Ruth was a Moabitess. And Bathsheba was the one who committed adultery with David. But all of those four women were in the line of the Messiah, the Christ. And of those four women, two of them were Gentiles. Ruth, a Rahab, the harlot from Jericho, and Ruth, from Moab, both of them ancestors of the Messiah. And don't you see then the grace of God that would take these women, some many of them with sinful past, and take this woman Ruth, who was an outcast, a Moabite, a non-Israelite, a sinner, and bring them into the relationship with and into the family tree of the Messiah. And it's the grace of God that could do that. And it's the grace of God that takes sinners like you and me and brings us into the family of God. And Jesus and David were not ashamed. And they saw to it that the names of these women were recorded. They were not ashamed of the fact that one of them was a heathen and one of them was a Gentile, that their ancestors were thus. And just like it says of us in the book of Hebrews, that Jesus was not ashamed to call us His brethren. For by grace are you saved through faith, and that not of yourselves, It's the gift of God.